D-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
You love Christmas. Good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We could do the whole night just playing. Who is that? Siberian Express? No, Trans Siberian Express. Trans Siberian Orchestra. I love their music, even though that's been around now for what, 8-9 years. I love that CD. Wow, there is really some good music on it. We will play some more of that this evening. Feel free to join the fun and frivolity at any point. This is our Christmas program here on Nova M Radio in the year of our Lord 2006. The phone number here is 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. We have a loosey-goosey program for you tonight. A little bit about the winter solstice, and then we have our traditional reading of the story of the birth of Jesus from the book of Luke. What else? We're going to bring Molly into the studio a little while. She's with your mother. Yeah,
my mother is upstairs trying with cough syrup to keep Molly awake, so that
trying to keep her awake with cough syrup.
Trying to keep her awake. Well, it's Mom's special brew.
Oh, okay.
Lots of caffeine.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Well, anyway, welcome to Yulapalooza 2006. We started this back in Chicago when we were on WLS, and when 98, I think, was the first time we did a Yulapalooza. Oh my God, we had kids from the Chicago Youth Symphony come in. We had who's the anchor now? Who's on NBC? He was the local anchor.
Lester Holt.
Lester Holt stopped by, who was a good friend in Chicago. He went on to become a mega star.
And there was
star.
A woman there from
Indiana.
Yeah, and
the coffee psychic
who would pour cream in different cups of coffee and read your future.
That was a lot of fun because we had lots of coffee in the studio and people would call in. Of course, we would have to drink the coffee. So by the end of the program, everybody was pretty wired. Who else? We had the doo-wop group, also from suburban Indiana. Who would come in? Stormy Weather, who put out a CD of Christmas music.
We have some songs from Stormy Weather
from their CD,
yeah.
And also a lady from what's the high end shop? that would come by and show us some of the...
Yeah, not Spencer's, but the other electronic shop. And she brought the electronic puppy that scared us to death and barked at us. And it was like a little robot. Now, this is 10 years ago.
Yeah, what was that? What was the store?
And to have a little robot dog on your desk 10 years ago. Sharper Image.
Sharper Image. Was it Sharper Image?
Yeah, Sharper Image.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, that started the tradition, and since then, of course, after being unceremoniously forced out at WLS because we were too liberal, and the Chicago radio station decided they wanted to be all Nazi all the time,
White like snow.
Yeah, exactly. We haven't actually worked for a radio station since then, so our efforts at Yulapalooza have been kind of catch-as-catch-can. Is Lester Holt coming in tonight? Couldn't make it into Atlanta?
No, okay. he's tied up there with the big wigs up at MSNBC. I'm sure he's partying with Keith Olbermann and
he's a good
all the
guy.
Pretty women.
Yeah, Lester Holt's a good guy.
MSNBC has the best-looking female anchors, and I'm a straight woman, so I know of which I speak.
Regarding the fact that this is the night, or not tonight, but Christmas Eve, according to Christian mythology, is the night of the virgin birth. I got an email here from Matt in New Bern, North Carolina, and the subject line is Ms. Cheney's virgin birth. This Mary Cheney is pregnant. She and her partner are going to have a baby, her lesbian partner, and bless their hearts for doing it. And, of course, the Cheney family is all excited, and the Bush family is all excited. I think it's wonderful because it's somebody within the comfort and security of the Bush crime family, and therefore it's okay if you're a lesbian and you want to have a baby. These people do everything in their power to stop you. If you're a gay man and want to adopt a child, these people do everything in their power to stop you. But if it's a member of their family, it's a joyous occasion. What they don't understand is if it's a member of anyone's family, it's a joyous occasion. But anyway, Matt Newbern, regarding Ms. Cheney's virgin birth, said, Mike, I would assume that Ms. Cheney was a virgin according to the traditional definition of a virgin. I don't know, Matt. And I really don't want to think about that. So anyway, speaking of that sort of thing, Monica Lewinsky, former White House intern, whose sexual relationship with Clinton led to the real madness of these right-wing animals on television and radio. Oh, my God, you remember the feeding frenzy. What, around Christmas? We went to a Christmas party in Chicago, and the woman leaned over me and said, I hate Bill Clinton. And I said, why? And she had had enough eggnog, and she said, because he's an effing liar! I'd never met this woman before. Anyway, Monica Lewinsky has graduated from the London School of Economics, according to her publicist. She is now 32 years old. She received her Master's of Science degree in Social Psychology last Thursday. And according to Reuters news agency, quote, the audience of students and parents erupted in spontaneous applause. It was a very emotional moment for her, end quote. Her spokesperson said that Lewinsky spent the past year studying and staying away from the London social scene. Her thesis, she completed a thesis entitled, quote, In Search of the Impartial Juror, colon, An Exploration of the Third-Person Effect and Pretrial Publicity, close quote. Certainly is an adequate title. So Monica Lewinsky graduates with a degree in economics. Good for you. Had it not been for Linda Tripp and the execrable Lucianne Goldberg, Bill and Monica could have had their little whatever it was, and no one ever would have cared. But I digress. Welcome to Yulapalooza 2006. We have... Dancing Bears here tonight, which half-naked elves, it's going to be difficult for you to see them, unlike the Howard Stern program, where they have completely naked elves, female elves. So you're going to have to use your imagination here. We have carolers, decaying deer. No, wait a minute. That's just at Dick Cheney's house. Never mind. We have 3 hours of festive fun and frivolity, and we're sick as dogs and hopped up on codeine cough syrup, just like the holidays of yesteryear. Or kind of like Christmas with the Bush twins, without the muggers and Secret Service. So anyway, do join in to the extent that you feel comfortable. And we're going to dedicate part of the program tonight to people as we go along. Of course, to Sarge and the people on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and also here in the first segment, William from Hollywood. He sent me an email, Mike, I'm looking forward to the Christmas show tonight. I'm in need of a lift, since as desperately as I've tried, I just can't get into it this year. I heard you speak of where you were 20 or so years ago, jobless, raising your son, and desperate. I don't have children. I do have a wife and certainly know what desperate feels like lately. I seem to be going through an inner self unintended soul-searching phase, not having been able to find a job and just hanging on, plus the death of my mother, really brings one to think about their past. Merry Christmas to Mike and Kathy and Molly William from Hollywood. Yeah, I hear you, Willem, William. You know, it's nice of you to tune in. So, first part of the program tonight, we're going to dedicate to William in Hollywood and Sarge on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and you too, because you are kind enough to tune in tonight. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Like spaghetti, it holds me so tight, like handcuffs at night, walking around in women's underwear.
In the office, there's a guy named Melvin. He pretends that I am Murphy Brown.
He'll say, are you ready? We'll say, whoa, man, let's wait until the wife is out of town. Later on, if you wanna, we can dress like Madonna. Put on some high shade and join the parade. Walking around in women's underwear. Ladies keep things missing. Didn't ask permission. Wearing her clothes, silk panties.
Be a disaster for governments that have got energy resources to be in the hands of these extremists. They would use energy to extract blackmail from the United States. And when you,
oh my, you just couldn't let that finish, could you? I don't blame you. This is from Karen in Ventura, who subject line is insanity, and she wrote, I think it was last night, she said, you're right, Rumsfeld and Bush are mad. I care for each of the 3,000 soldiers that have died in this, or that has died in this illegal war as if they were my own. My son is 22, and I'm proud that he is brave in making a stand for peace by not even thinking about going into the military service. Tonight, along with our holiday decorations, I have planted 3 white crosses and an American flag to demonstrate that our American family mourns, along with other American families who have lost a loved one in this mad war. Karen and Ventura. And I, you know, I've been reading, this afternoon I spent a couple hours going through the some of the stories on the internet about Bush's apparent plans that are in the works. Robert Perry, who's a writer that everyone should read as often as he writes something, but at BaltimoreChronicle.com and other places, he has a piece titled A Very Dangerous New Year, and in it he talks about the very real plans that are being put together by Blair, Bush, and Olmert from Israel. Blair from the UK and Bush from the US, seriously, very seriously, planning to launch. I can't even get my mind around this. Launch strikes against Syria and Iran after the first of the year. Is that what they're saying? That's what the plan is. It's incredible. And Robert Perry and of course Seymour Hersh, writing for the New Yorker magazine, has already brought this up. But Perry writes, the first 2 or 3 months of 2007 represent a dangerous opening for an escalation of war in the Middle East, as George W. Bush will be tempted to, quote, double down, end quote, his gamble in Iraq by joining with Israel's Prime Minister Ehud Olmert and outgoing British Prime Minister Tony Blair to strike at Syria and Iran, intelligence sources say. Now, Perry is the American journalist who broke the Iran-Contra horror in this country. So, you read this stuff, as I did today, and it's just like, no, this really, really, really is not going to happen. Not really. Really not going to happen. Ward, who wrote to me, his subject line is "Onward, Christian Soldiers." He sends in this story about Robin Hayes, as a Republican in the 8th District of North Carolina. And this was on Liberal NC Blogspot. Liberal NC is a North Carolina Blogspot. Robin Hayes, a member of Congress, says, we will win in Iraq by spreading the message of Jesus Christ there. Now, he won the election in the 8th District in North Carolina, according to the blogger here, by only a hair's width and almost, I guess his re-election, almost got kicked out of Congress. He seems to have had some profound psychological psychological effect on Mr. Hayes. He gave a speech last week at the Concord, North Carolina Rotary Club and the local weekly newspaper, the Concord Standard and Mount Pleasant Times, reported that Mr. Hayes said, among other things, in his speech, first of all, quote, the war in Iraq has got to be won. It's being won, end quote. And then came the real kicker, quote, stability in Iraq ultimately depends on spreading the message of Jesus Christ, the message of peace on earth, goodwill toward men. Everything depends on everyone learning about the birth of the Savior. So, if we just turn our soldiers into missionaries, everything will be okay, right? And as the blogger writes, first we send our men over there to take out the weapons of mass destruction, then it was to spread democracy, and now you want them to spread the message of Jesus Christ. Well, as the blogger writes, it so happens people in Iraq already have a Savior, but unfortunately for Mr. Hayes, it's Muhammad, not Jesus. And of course, this kind of talk plays right into the hands of Al-Qaeda or anyone else, and confirms what their leaders have always been saying, those American soldiers are just modern crusaders. Things are getting crazy, truth seekers.
Police stop my car. Police stop my car. The police made me stop. Walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. Police stop my car. Police stop my car. The police made me stop. Walk a straight line and blow a balloon up. They wanna wish me a sober Christmas. That's why they always pull me over Christmas.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. After the next break, we're going to get Molly in here and do Night Before Christmas before she... it's way past her bedtime as it is. She took a long nap today. And Molly is, Kathy's kidding about the cough syrup. Molly is just about over her cold. It's just the two of us now, you know. You know, you've had kids. Little virus factories. A winter solstice celebration. I have in front of me here excerpts from the Cedarhurst Universalist Unitarian or Unitarian Universalist worship service in Finksburg, Maryland. I don't know when this was this service was celebrated, but it talks a little bit about it. Most of us understand how the obvious symbols of Christmas, the Christian Christmas, came to be, how they were taken from the Druidic or Celtic faith. But it says here, a solstice celebration will respect a variety of sacred traditions, and we encourage everyone to participate and learn. Our Yule altar contains elements of the central images and mysteries of our festival: candles for living light, evergreens, pine and mistletoe representing the life of the new year, a leafless branch to remind us of winter's power, the fruit of the earth, apples, pomegranates, remember the story of Persephone, and gilded nuts, sacred cave figures depicting the Earth Mother and Sun Child, which we will place outside following our service. Some say the word Yule comes from Old English, Saxon, and Norse words meaning wheel. The ancients saw the turn of the seasons as the turning of the sacred wheel of the year. Others ascribe the word to a Norse word meaning to yell, the process by which the ancients called back the wandering sun. German linguists cite the old name for December as Jol, hence Yule. In celebration, decorate your Yule log cut from the oak tree, the sacred tree of the Druids. Add gilded evergreen to represent the birth of the new year. Tie on black ribbon for the death of the old, and use holly to honor the Holly King. We burn the log to welcome the return of the sun. So, the winter solstice is the eve, December 22nd, I should say, is the eve of the winter solstice, or the 21st this year, the longest night of the year. This is the stillness behind motion, when time itself stops, the center which is also the circumference of all. Now darkness triumphs, and yet gives way and changes into light. We will be awake in the dark. We will call the sun from the womb of night. As we celebrate the solstice, we join across time and space all the festivals of light emerging from the dark. May all the Yule fires, all the Hanukkah candles, all the Christmas lights the world over, and all the lights we are about to kindle here tonight not only brighten the darkness of winter, but also brighten the darkness of our hearts. May all these lights, set ablaze by people of goodwill across the globe, assure us that spring will follow winter, hope will triumph over despair, peace will eclipse war, and love will outlast evil. Well, that's nice. That's nice. I like that. And let's see. One of our listeners, I think, from Hawaii sent this in. The subject line said, I was looking at Aesop's fables, and the first one I came across described the bush pretexts. This is the wolf and the lamb. Wolf, meeting with a lamb astray from the fold, resolved not to lay violent hands on him, but to find some plea to justify to the lamb the wolf's right to eat him. He thus addressed the lamb, Sir, last year you grossly insulted me. Indeed, bleated the lamb in a mournful tone of voice, I was not then born. Well, then, said the wolf, you feed in my pasture. No, good sir, replied the lamb, I have not yet tasted grass. Again said the wolf, You drink of my well. No, exclaimed the lamb, I never yet drank water, for as yet my mother's milk is both food and drink to me. Upon which the wolf seized him and ate him up, saying, Well, I won't remain supperless, even though you refute every one of my imputations. The moral, the tyrant will always find a pretext for his tyranny. That does remind me of Bush's adventures, doesn't it? Huh? And then this. a fable that describes Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. Another Aesop fable. This one is The Farmer and the Snake. One winter, a farmer found a snake, stiff and frozen with cold. He had compassion on it, and taking it up, placed it in his bosom. The snake was quickly revived by the warmth, and resuming its natural instincts, bit its benefactor, inciting on him a mortal wound. "Oh!" cried the farmer with his last breath. "I am rightly served for pitying a scoundrel!" The moral? The greatest kindness will not bind the ungrateful. Come on, Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi. Don't be ungrateful.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
And then there's this that was published today by the Independent of the UK, Climate Change versus Mother Nature. I wish right-wingers would understand the difference between weather and climate, but they don't. Climate Change versus Mother Nature. Scientists reveal that bears have stopped hibernating. In certain parts of the planet. It says bears have stopped hibernating in the mountains of northern Spain, according to scientists. And what may be one of the strongest signs yet of how much climate change is affecting the natural world, in a December in which bumblebees, butterflies, and even swallows have been on the wing in Britain, European brown bears have been lumbering through the forest of Spain's Cantabrian mountains when normally they would already be in their long annual sleep. Spanish meteorologists predict that this year is likely to be the warmest year on record in Spain, just as it is likely to be the warmest year on record in Britain, where temperature records go back to 1659. Globally, 2006 is likely to be the sixth warmest year in a record going back to the mid-19th century. And Mark Wright, the science advisor to the Worldwide Fund for Nature in the UK, said that bears giving up hibernation was, quote, what we would expect, close quote, with climate change. He said it does not in itself prove global warming, but it is certainly consistent with predictions of it. He says what is particularly interesting about this is that hitherto the warming has seemed to be happening fastest at the poles and at high latitudes. And now we're getting examples of it happening further south and heading toward the equator. He adds, I think it's an indication of what's to come. It shows climate change is not a natural phenomenon, but something that is affecting not only the weather, but impacting on the natural world in ways we're only now beginning to understand. That leaves me feeling very uncomfortable that the bears are not hibernating. A little bit later on tonight, we are going to share with you Bob Herbert's column from today's New York Times, America's Open Wound. And coming back from this break, we'll get Molly and bring her down and see if we can do. Last year and the year before, she was way too young to really understand what was going on. I don't think she does now either, but she just knows something's afoot, something's in the air. You know, there's holly and mistletoe and a Christmas tree and lights in her living room and her little playroom. I think she knows something is up. We'll see what happens after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The evening has been so veteran nice.
I'll hold your hands, they're just
Let's have Molly and the Night Before Christmas now. Hey. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
How are you?
It's almost ready for bedtime for you, isn't it?
No.
No, you don't want to go to bed?
No.
What do you want to do?
I want to eat.
You want to eat? What would you like to eat?
Applesauce.
Applesauce. Okay. Well, let's do this first. You want to get up on my lap?
That's a microphone.
Yeah, that's a microphone. Okay. You want to...
Magic book.
Okay, here we go. This is the Night Before Christmas.
Okay.
Okay. It was the night before Christmas when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even...
A mouse.
A mouse, that's right. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. Who's St. Nicholas? That's Santa Claus, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. The children were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. And Mom in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. You like naps?
Yeah.
Yeah. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter that I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. See, look at that man. He's jumping out of bed to go see what the noise is, huh?
By the sound.
He's got that's a lantern in his hand.
By that sound.
That sound? That's reindeer. Away to the window, I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, and threw up the sash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave a luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and 8 tiny reindeer. See them coming through the sky? Who's that?
Frosty the Snowman.
Frosty the Snowman? Okay. With a little old driver so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. Santa Claus, yeah. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Dasher, now Dancer, now Prancer and Vixen, on Comet, on Cupid, on Donder and Blitzen. There they go. To the top of the porch, to the top of the wall, now dash away, dash away, dash away all. As dry leaves before the wild hurricane fly, when they meet with an obstacle, mount to the sky. So up to the housetop, the coursers they flew with a sleigh full of toys, and St. Nicholas too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As I drew in my head and was turning around, down the chimney St. Nicholas came with a bound.
Check.
Are you saying check, check, into the microphone? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot. And his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. Look, here he comes. What's this?
A bear.
It's a teddy bear, isn't it? A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. Okay, you've checked. I think we're all set. Okay? Yeah. His eyes how they twinkled. His dimples how merry. His cheeks were like roses. His nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow, and the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. What's he eating?
Cookies.
Cookies, right. And he's drinking, he's eating cookies, and he's drinking, what's that?
Milk.
That's right, cookies and milk. The stump of a pipe yelled tight in his teeth, and the smoke, it encircled his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly that shook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He was chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, and I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. A wink of his eye and a twist of his head soon gave me to know I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings, then turned with a jerk and laying his finger aside of his nose and giving a nod, up the chimney he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim as he drove out of sight, Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
You're funny.
I'm funny. You're funny.
No, you're funny.
No, you're funny.
No, you're funny.
Can you say Merry Christmas?
Merry Christmas.
What?
Merry Christmas.
Here, say it into the microphone. Say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Please. All right, Molly. Merry Christmas. Ow, my headphones. Merry. Wait a minute. Stop. Don't move. Okay, you're all tangled up in the... Okay. Bye, honey. Night-night. I love you. Bye. Good night, sweet princess.
Let me hold on a minute. Let me shut the door.
Well, that was. Is your mother got her? Okay. Check, check, check. The kid has spent way too much time around rock and roll acts, huh? Check, check, check.
Well, that's what she sees us doing every night before the show.
Yeah.
Check, check.
Oh, my God. Well, that was good this year. That was good. That was good. Last year, I think she was...
Hope Mom gets her some applesauce.
Yeah. She last year, she just kind of sat on my lap and went... Bleh, bleh. And the year before that, well, she was only 6 months old. I'm sorry. Please indulge us. We just think the world of Molly, as most parents think the world of their own kids, and the fact that she is, this is the first Christmas I think she's kind of aware of. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I was afraid she was going to grab the, she had ahead of my, you saw that, she had hold of my headphones. Kathy had one finger on the mini disc player getting ready to play some music if we needed it. All right, we'll be back after the break at the top of the hour. If you'd like to join in tonight, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. 800-989-1480. We have miles to go before we sleep. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Merry Christmas. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Our Christmas program. We'll be gone. Well, we're not going anywhere. We'll be off the air tomorrow night and Monday night, Christmas night. What is Nova M doing tomorrow night? Jeff Farias will be 7 for us from KPHX. Bless his heart. Thank you, Jeff. And then on Christmas Day, just a Best of Malloy show. I don't think there is a Best of Malloy show that is appropriate to Christmas. I really don't. All right. We'll come to some of your phone calls here in a second. I want to read this Bob Herbert piece today, America's Open Wound. And again, the phone number is 800-989-1480. So if you want to join in, come on. Oh, at the bottom of this hour, Oh Holy Nightmare, and at the bottom of the next hour, the reading from Luke. This is Bob Herbert writing in today's New York Times. New Orleans, it's eerie. The air is still. There's no noise. Night is falling. The 5 stone steps in front of me once led to a porch, or maybe directly to the front door of a house. There's no way to be sure. The house is completely gone. All that's left are the 5 steps, one of which is painted with the address 1630 Raines Street. The steps sit alone like a piece of minimalist art at the front of a small vacant lot full of weeds and rubble. Next door is a house that is completely capsized, fallen over on its side like a sunken ship. Welcome to the Lower Ninth Ward. You won't find much holiday spirit here. In every direction, as far as it is possible to see, is devastation. On another lot, piled high with the rubble of a ruined house, I saw a middle-aged man standing in the front yard weeping. He wore a dirty white baseball cap, and he was sobbing like a child. I walked toward him to ask a question, but he waved me away. Whatever you've heard about New Orleans, the reality is much worse. Think of it as a vast open wound, this once great American city that is still largely in ruins, with many of its people still writhing in agony more than a year after the catastrophic flood that followed Hurricane Katrina. Enormous stretches of the city, mile after mile after mile, have been abandoned. The former residents have doubled up or tripled up with relatives or found shelter in the ubiquitous white trailers of the Federal Emergency Management Agency or moved, in some cases permanently, to Texas, Mississippi, Georgia, and beyond. Some have simply become homeless. This is a ghostly city, if you ask me, said Sheila Etheridge, a waitress whose home was destroyed and whose three children are staying with relatives near Atlanta. It gets real spooky when the sun goes down. They let me sleep in the back of the restaurant, but I'll tell you the truth, we don't have too many customers. You see what those neighborhoods are like. They're empty. The people gone. The recovery in New Orleans has gone about as well as the war in Iraq. In mid-September 2005, with parts of the city still submerged and soldiers from the 82nd Airborne Division on patrol, President Bush made a dramatic floodlit appearance in historic Jackson Square. In a nationally televised speech, he promised not only to do all that he could to rebuild the Gulf Coast, but also to confront the terrible problem of deep and persistent poverty. That poverty, said the president, has roots in a history of racial discrimination, which cut off generations from the opportunity of America. We have a duty to confront this poverty with bold action. Now, more than a year later, the population of New Orleans is less than half what it was before the storm. The federal government has allocated billions for the city's recovery, but much of that money has been wasted or remains hopelessly tied up in the bureaucracy. Very little has gotten to the neediest victims, the people who were poor to begin with and then lost their homes and their livelihoods to the storm. Many of the city's hospitals and schools remain closed. Some will never reopen. There's very little public transportation. The politicians have come up with a stunning array of post-Katrina initiatives, but one grandiose recovery plan after another has faltered. The terrible experience of the flood and its aftermath has left an imprint on the minds of most residents that's as distinct as the water lines that stain so many of the city's buildings. A cab driver's voice faltered as he told me once about an obese woman who put pillows under her arms as the floodwaters were rising. She thought the pillows would help her float. She drowned, the driver said. Emotional and psychological problems are rampant, but there is a drastic shortage of mental health professionals to treat them. People are suffering from severe anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, and other illnesses. Doctors told me that large numbers of mentally ill individuals have gone more than a year without taking their prescribed medication. Many of the poor residents in the city feel that they've been abandoned by the government and the rest of America, and that the president broke his promise to help. We're in terrible trouble down here, said a woman named Dolores Good, who stood outside the Superdome asking passersby if they knew where she might find work as a babysitter. We were all over the television last year. Now we're back to being nobody. And as Sarge has kept us aware on this program, it's not just New Orleans. It's astonishing. One can make an argument, if one were charitable, regarding Bush and his war, which I am not, but one could make the argument that the first thing to disappear in an armed conflict are the plans that were written up to get the army into it to begin with. But that's not true where it concerns the Mississippi Gulf Coast. The failure of the Bush administration to handle this issue is clearly the defining aspect and attitude of this corrupt administration. A lot of people say, and I've said it before, no, the war in Iraq is. That too. Or the domestic chaos. Or making sure that the super wealthy in this country become super, super wealthy. But the Mississippi Gulf Coast and the fact that there are literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people who are still internal refugees in the United States of America, are displaced persons. I can remember as a very young kid, my mother referring to people who had had their homes blown to pieces in the war in Europe as DPs. DPs, displaced persons. We had somebody move into our neighborhood when I was a kid. Kind of foreign sounding, I don't know, Polish, Romanian, Bulgarian, Czechoslovakian, who knew? But my mom said, oh yeah, the new people on the street, they're DPs. And here we are with displaced persons in the United States. Poor people. I will guarantee you that people who had money, people had position, people had power, have recovered just fine, thank you. Oh yeah, 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 lost the house. Lost the memorabilia, lost the photo albums, had to get a new car. But they're doing fine, given the fact that they went through this tragedy. But the poor people, the poor people, most of whom were black or darker skinned than most white folks, they have not recovered. And so it goes, day after day after day after day. On the Mississippi Gulf Coast. It's like nobody cares. Oh, the casinos. Hey, hey, hey. We got some casinos up and running in Mississippi. Yes, sir. Going to generate all those nice tax dollars. No unions allowed, but we're going to put people back to work. We're going to pay them $6.50 an hour. How's that? Huh? You like that? As far as New Orleans is concerned, that hurricane did what urban renewal never could do. If you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Snicker, snicker. So here we are, almost a year and a half after the worst devastation to hit this country from a natural disaster in our country's history. And what has the Bush administration done? What have the politicians done? Nothing.
Someday at Christmas there'll be no wars when we have learned what Christmas is for. When we have found what life's really worth, there'll be peace on earth. Someday all our dreams will come to me. Someday in a world where men are free. Maybe not in time for you and me, but someday at Christmas time.
Your host for a Peance Friends Future, it's Mike Malone.
There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near.
21 past the hour, almost 22 past the hour. Every time I hear that, I got to break out the Johnny Mathis albums or CDs. Well, we still have the albums. Okay, let me rephrase it. I still have the albums. Kathy looks at me and says, who? All right, let's do some phone calls here real quick. Let's start with Greg, who has called in from Sacramento. Hey, Greg.
Mike, welcome. Welcome back to Sacramento.
Well, thank you, Greg. We are so happy to be back in that city.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if you remember me, but I was your friendly door greeter at the Crest Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I still have fond memories of that.
Yeah, we had a good time. at that that gig.
The impeachment forum.
The impeachment forum. That was great fun.
Yeah, and I'm sure that when if you came back to do it again, that you would still you would still get the warmest of welcomes and have the red carpet thrown out.
Well, I will definitely try to make a trip back to Sacramento. We are trying to plan something for after the first of the year to take in San Francisco station, a Sacramento station, a Seattle station. Notice they all begin with S's. And the Phoenix station. So we just might...
you mean like a tour?
Yeah, and possibly San Diego, if San Diego comes back on the way they used to be when we were on Air America. So we would just make it, you know, the Lollapalooza tour or something. I don't know.
Well, your screener was, we had a little chat, and he kind of hinted that that you were wanting to try to keep the conversation up. I guess the only thing I can say would be happy holidays from my household to yours, and happy New Year. And I'm hoping that the 2007 will you know, be a good year, and hopefully that Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi will get a clue that that we want this administration thrown out. I mean, it's just.
I hope so. I hope so. You know, and I hope they understand what we were talking about last night. This is not about what you and I want. This is what the Constitution demands. And by God, if we are not, I get so sick sometimes of hearing right-wingers talk about sticking with, well, I'm an original constructionist. I believe in the Constitution. Well, if you believe in the Constitution and you're a right-winger, then you should be in the front row demanding that the constitutional imperatives regarding high crimes and misdemeanors by this thug be carried out, and that he be brought to trial in the Senate after being impeached or indicted in the House. So we'll see. You'll notice, though, that the right wing has been utterly silent. When Bill Clinton lied about his little whatever it was with Monica Lewinsky, you know, all you could hear was about how the Constitution was being threatened, how the rule of law was being threatened.
These bozos.
Oh, my God. So here we are with the most criminal administration in this nation's history, and not a sound from these right-wing thugs in government or media. Not
they're
a
morons.
Sound.
They're utter morons, just brain-dead, you know.
Waste, I know.
Yeah, I remember this is radio, so
yeah,
you got to pick your word.
Yeah, and it's not the Howard Stern show, so we have to be kind of careful here. But no, you're absolutely right. And beyond being morons, it's just so, I hate to sound like I'm on the playground, but it's just so grossly unfair to do what these right wingers did where it concerned Clinton and his lie. And Bush and this murderous administration, unbelievable.
I'm trying to find some bit of energy to remain optimistic, because once this Congress, it's my belief that once this Congress takes its seat, that the noise machine from the left, from the progressives, they're going to be screening bloody murder to put this administration on trial and to get them out of office. This guy is a madman.
I hope that happens. I hope it happens. The Constitution has to be satisfied, or we're no longer a constitutionally ordered republic. We just aren't. So.
I'm scared though that you know, this with all this buildup in the Persian Gulf, it's going to get ugly.
I share that. All right, thanks, Greg. We're glad to be back in Sacramento. You have a nice holiday. Okay.
You do the same.
All right, sir. Take care. All right, Truth Seekers, when we come back, we are going to... Normally, we have a Pickles a Christmas message, and this year, because of the thing on her leg, she didn't do it. So we're going to play last year's, which I think you'll find weird.
I'll sing my day of glory. I play my day when men of good will live in peace again, and peace on earth can it be.
the Gulf Coast countries' interest that there be a stable Iran, Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
Sick bastard. Five before the hour. Laura Pickles Bush usually has a Christmas message for the common folk out here. That would be you and me and those who are even less fortunate than we are. But that is one of the requirements of the upper classes in this country is one of the requirements is to acknowledge, especially at Christmas, acknowledge our existence and this year, though, Pickles was dealing with a sore, I think she called it, on her leg. And too many people...
Yeah, she was traumatized by all the different women wearing that same Oscar de la Renta gown.
Oh, at the Christmas party? That's the, yeah, yeah. So she just couldn't get together a Christmas message. So... we have kept on file her Christmas message from last year that had to do with the Katrina survivors, among other issues. And since we don't have a Christmas message from Pickles from this year, we're going to play the Christmas message from Pickles from last year. Ladies and gentlemen, Laura Pickles Bush.
This is Laura Pickles Bush with a special Holy Day greeting from America's First Family to all you lesser American families this most wonderful time of the year. We're on our way to Prairie Chapel, but have stopped at your adorable West Houston Toys for Tots Collection Center and Emergency Hurricane Evacuation Shelter to encourage all of you to thank the Almighty for the wonderful blessings you've received this year. While it would be easy to sink into despair over the loss of your material possessions and elderly family members to Hurricane Kimberlina, for the sake of your soggy little brown children, it's important not to be sad. Gather up those damp little youngins, because in a few minutes I'll share a very merry Holy Day bedtime video of our own First Family puppies, Barney and Beasley, as they scamper about the carefully guarded National White House bright and beautiful taxpayer-decked-out mansion. Watching this cheerful and fanciful Holy Day tour will drift them off to dreamland with visions of sugar plums and fond memories of happier and less clammy Christmases past, full of toys and trees and living grandparents and perhaps warm and playful puppies of their own frolicking in your modestly decorated tract homes before all was lost to the grimy gumbo. I know they're going to like it. Just because you're technically homeless doesn't mean you have to abandon your Christmas celebrations. You musical people are creative and keen improvisers. There must be something left to loot in time to get it under the tangle of wire coat hangers, tinsel, and pop cleaners you fashioned into a tree. I'm sure if you dig around in the damp and moldy rubble that used to be your homes, you can find some festive flotsam to festoon the 1973 Ford Torino station wagon you now call home. Remember, it takes 43 muscles to frown, but only 16 to smile, and really only 4 with Botox and the right medication. So everyone can have a happy, albeit isolated season, free from all sorts of nasty and unnecessary emotions like sadness or anger or fear or anxiety through the wonders of modern pharmaceuticals. So deck that dashboard, share a cup of kindness and a bottle of Xanax with the underprivileged minority friend of your choice, and you too can experience the ultimate joy of a detached and indifferent Christmas weekend. Until those meds kick in, you might find comfort during these trying times by continuing your familiar family Christmas festivities. For example, every year we look forward to the day the Secret Service escorts our stumbling twin daughters, Jenna and the other one, to our magnificent door for their annual spirited games of What Beta Theta Boy Has My Panties or Bobbing for Barbiturates.
As do all of you, we have much to be thankful for this holy day. Any Bush family get-together that doesn't end with a stomach pump and a restraining order is a reason to count our blessings. So whether your family is separated due to a natural disaster like Hurricane Carmina, or doing their patriotic duty by serving in a very justified war against swarthy evildoers who are constantly plotting and planning and possibly hiding in your neighborhood, waiting for you to go to bed so they can shimmy down your chimney and eat your sleeping Christian children, it's important to maintain your time-honored family Christmas traditions. And as for this alleged war on Christmas, nonsense. For Bush's sake, nothing could be farther from the truth. My Bushy is a godly man who honors the birth of the tiny baby Jesus and the national economy, and therefore urges retailers to put the Christ back in Christmas sales. Just because we don't want to send out Holy Day cards with images of a shady-looking bearded man who lurks and hides in an icy and isolated location, hoarding bags of suspicious packages, certainly doesn't mean the White House is waging a war on Christmas. Trust me, when my Bushy declares an undeclared and unconstitutional war on an innocent, unarmed foreign entity, there's no mistaking the bright and beautiful bombshells cascading like lethal snowflakes over the otherwise peaceful and silent landscape. Rest assured, we've learned the lessons of 9/11, and if the North Pole posed a credible threat, that sneaky Santa person and his little evil elves would be trading their snowboarding for waterboarding on a tropical winter vacation at Gitmo, enjoying special holiday servings of double fruit in their boxcar saunas. Speaking of 9/11, as we occasionally do, some of the less patriotic among you are getting your trivial and quaint Bill of Rights in a wad over a measly little quasi-legal insignificant sneak a peek surveillance. Apparently, you don't know what's double plus good for you. Remember, the holy day season is a time to be extra cautious. If Saddam Santa knows who's been naughty or nice, shouldn't Alberto Gonzalez have access to the same crucial database? Honestly, how else are we to know if a precious little child deserves a shiny red apple in their stocking or a set of nipple clips hot-wired to a car battery? And finally, we have a message to our friends in the media that aren't currently on our payroll. We hope you'll take a break from reporting on the carnage and devastation and realize that Christmas is no time to darken our beautiful minds with violent, bloody images of torture victims. That's why we celebrate Easter. So from our heavily guarded house, which you'll never see, to your house, which we honestly don't care about, this is Laura Pickles Bush wishing you a holy day season filled with all things as bright and beautiful as the white phosphorus-filled skies over Fallujah on a dark winter night. Merry Christmas, never forget 9/11, and God bless almost all of you.
Oh my God. Oh. Whew. All right, let's go back to some phone calls here. Sarge has called in from Mississippi. Hey, Sarge.
I apologize for calling so soon, Mike, but I had something I really wanted to get said tonight, and I hope,
sure.
I hope I'm not abusing your goodness.
Not at all. Let it rip, Sarge.
I sent you an email just a little while ago. It's the story of Leroy Johnson, and I hope maybe you'll read it, but if you don't, it's posted at my site, and it's a very sad story, but it has a somewhat happy ending. Mr. Johnson has probably seen the worst that life can offer in this hurricane recovery.
Mm-hmm.
He's lost just about everything, including family. And I'm happy to announce that the liberal radio people like Head On Radio Network, Nova M, people have sent in enough money that with it and the work of volunteers like the ladies from Mississippi Home Again, Jim Yancey, the man's going to have him a new home within 10 days to 2 weeks.
That's great, Sarge.
The man, I don't want to give the story away in case you do read it, or those that'll go read it themselves. But the man just about had his house rebuilt, and faulty wiring caught on fire, and it burned down. And he had two very precious, very beautiful children, 2 and 3 years old, that perished in the fire.
Oh, my God.
And they were his grandchildren. And I'm hoping this Christmas people will think of Mr. Johnson. And I'm hoping they'll think of those two children. And they'll think that there's a lot of children right down here on this Mississippi Gulf Coast and Louisiana coast that have no home tonight, that will not have a home come Christmas. And at the first of the year sometime, we're going to put together a drive, and it's going to be put together by NovaM, Head On Radio Network, and my site, unreportednews.net. And we're going to have a list of 15 things that the Jackson County Community Services Coalition needs in order to help these people get their homes rebuilt, like sheetrock, children's clothing, bricks, whatever.
I'll tell you what, Sarge, I'll read this a little bit later. Let me move out the way because here comes the commercial train. This is a great letter. I was just reading it.
Okay. Thank you, Mike.
All right, Sarge. Take care,
appreciate
pal.
It, buddy.
Merry Christmas.
Bye.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
10 before the hour. All right, Sarge has asked me to do this, and I'm going to do it. The part of this story that is not tragic was made possible in part by listeners to Head On Radio Network and NovaM Radio Network, who donated money to Jackson County Community Services Coalition. They are at jccsc.org, and others like the Women from Mississippi Home Again that have selflessly contributed by putting aside their lives to come help. Leroy Johnson, 57, of Pascagoula, Mississippi, is living the trials of Job. Hurricane Katrina wrecked his house. Only months away from completing the rebuilding, a bad wire ignited and destroyed the home. 23 days later, his two grandsons, ages 2 and 3, died in a fire at their apartment. It is a tragedy of biblical proportions. Leroy Johnson was living in his boyhood home on Tucker Avenue when Hurricane Katrina flooded it with 4 feet of water. With hopes of reclaiming residency in the small house by Christmas of 2006, he started repair work. As is common in our post-Katrina world, the work was painfully slow but progressive. November 3rd, the Christmas deadline looked reasonable as Leroy worked tirelessly on the house in order to move out of the FEMA trailer he shared with the mother of his children and his 19-year-old son, Leroy Jr. The next day, a bad wire in the back bedroom created a flame that burned through the house and reduced Leroy's dreams to ashes. What he had salvaged from the wrath of Katrina, he lost to the fury of the fire, except for his mother's Bible. She had passed away years earlier, but the Bible stayed with Leroy in her house, and no destruction would befall it. The one true light in this man's life, laden with misfortune, was his grandchildren, specifically 3-year-old Philip Jr. and 2-year-old Kishon. Leroy had helped raise those boys from birth while their parents went to school and to work. His pride and joy, he took them everywhere with him. They loved Pawpaw's dogs, much to the dog's chagrin, and the swing set in the backyard. They were full of mischief and full of life and full of love. Katrina forced the little boys, their parents PJ and Claudia, and their little sister Nakiria, into an apartment on Jasmine Avenue in Moss Point, Mississippi. Around 8 o'clock the morning of November 27, 2006, Claudia awoke inside her worst nightmare. Her sons were screaming, "Mommy, help me, help me." There was fire coming from their bedroom. Claudia could not get to them, so she grabbed Nakiria and ran outside to get help. An unidentified passerby tried to get to the boys to no avail. So did a firefighter without its success when he arrived. The scream stopped. The fire went out. Claudia's daddy drove up to the family's apartment to find her wailing in the street. They were gone. His babies, his buddies, were gone. Darkness and despair are cruel extinguishers of hope and joy. PJ, Claudia, and Nikiria are redefining their lives in a rental house. Papa, Granny, and Uncle Leroy are still in cramped quarters in their trailer, sitting on the property in front of the burned-out shell of their home. They have a resurrected hope that someone, somewhere, somehow, will be able to help them. In 10 days to 2 weeks, thanks to the good hearts mentioned in the opening of this article, Mr. Leroy Johnson, 57, of Pascagoula, Mississippi, will be moving into a new house built by the Jackson County Community Services Coalition. That is, Sarge, that is biblical, that story. I'm so sorry to hear that. I don't know how you find hope or resurrection in a story like that. Phone number here is 800-989-1480. We'll keep you updated on how the Johnson family is doing. Sarge will keep us updated. Let's go to Dorothy, who's calling in from Phoenix. Dorothy, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I'm a first-time caller, a long-time listener.
Well, good to hear from you.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to let you know I remember hearing you tell that story to Molly, her first Christmas.
Uh-huh.
And it's been enjoyable both, you know,
yes,
each time to listen to her grow.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to mention something about this business with Sarge. I'm glad that Nova M is going to be doing something here in Phoenix, you know, to help out there. I've been trying to get a hold of email Nancy Pelosi about this. And, you know, you can't even get her, you know, you can't even get to email her. Her site is so unfriendly that she won't even receive email.
Well, I think Pelosi is still just a representative. She's not yet been sworn in as Speaker of the House. And what I have discovered is those websites, excuse me, the representatives will, for the most part, will only take emails from their district.
Yeah.
Which I guess in some way, I guess that makes sense. Pelosi, once she does become Speaker, I think she'll be reachable. But right now, that's what that's about.
Oh, because it's frustrating. I tried to email her about this again, and there's just no access.
Right.
I did email Harry Reid the other day and kind of bawled him out about that speech that he made, wanting the troops to go again.
Yeah. Well, good for you. Keep up the pressure. That's all I can say, Dorothy. Hey, listen, thank you so much, Dorothy. I'm glad you called in. We'll talk again, all right? You take care. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. The Christmas program on the Molloy program, 2006. We have been all over the map tonight, I think. And coming up after the very next break, we are going to play to a rapidly diminishing number of requests, Oh Holy Nightmare. You all love that, don't you? And then at the bottom of the hour, when we come back from that break, is that when we do the reading from Luke? All right. Let's go to your phone calls. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Ooh, hey, Matthew.
That story really did hit home, didn't it?
The one from Mississippi? Yes, it did.
Yeah. I mean, I was, well, I still might, but, I mean, that's just one thing that just, if you aren't so angry at the, I mean, I remember the montage you had, I think it was yesterday with Rush Limbaugh, mocking the Katrina survivors, and just hearing that kind of story, you said yourself that you were wanting to do horrible, or wanting to see horrible things to him, and that just solidified it for me.
I cannot understand, nor will I ever in any way accept the kind of mockery that that evil son of a bitch puts on people, just so undeserving of mockery. Limbaugh is one of the worst things I think that's ever happened to this country. He makes Father Coughlin from the 30s look like a good Christian.
Yeah. But the point that I wanted to bring to, actually, since yesterday one of the topics was the rather frank discussion about the South. I mean, I was born in Texas. I've been bred in Texas. But thank God I was born from a New England family because I hate to think what, because I mean, I see the stereotypes all the time, the Southern stereotypes.
Right.
And you know, people never believe me when I tell them I'm from Texas, because they think Texans are just a bunch of bumpkins.
Right.
And so I really too hate the attitude that a lot of people have down here. And this is coming from a person who's lived here all his life. So. Mm-hmm. The second and primary point that I was going to make is that even I was after watching Keith Olbermann today, because I never miss a chance to see him,
mm-hmm.
I was watching Scarborough Country for whatever reason, and Scarborough, as any normal person knows, is one of those fascists, and from the signals I've been getting from the right wing, or at least the conservatives, and I'm talking about all conservatives, paleo-conservatives, neoconservatives, is that they feel Bush, and I've heard this term used many times even by some conservative friends of mine, is too liberal.
Well, sure.
And I think that, okay, so Bush is too liberal. We think he's just too fascistic. So I cannot classify what Bush is outside of the regular, I mean, what we all know what he is. But if he's too liberal for conservatives and he's too evil for liberals, mm-hmm. that means he's just – that just means he's evil. He's just – everybody – the only people who like him now, from what I notice, are people so outside the realm of reality that they, too, are borderlining either complete insanity or evilness,
mm-hmm.
that they wish upon, act, or feel evil. And so what I really would like for, is the normal people of this country to look at ourselves and say, okay, we're being run by evil people. And even the more pacified people, the more pacified Democrats, need to realize that these people are evil. And there is only one way you can deal with evil people, and that is to get rid of them. And so, you know, that's pretty much my entire point. And I probably lost you somewhere around there. But
No, I understand completely what you're saying. That's why I hope Pelosi and Reid will get rid of them, because I'm sure you're talking politically get rid of them. I don't disagree with anything that you've said. This country is probably more divided right now than ever. It's more divided than it was, in my opinion, in the lead up to the Civil War. There is a rage that has been developed by these right wingers that they have forced on the rest of us. That is just it's astonishingly scary. I've said before, for the past couple of years, to have to live in the same country as people who are hell bent on being religious fanatics, destroying the Constitution, just destroying all the progress that's been made in this country since the late 30s, early 40s with Franklin Roosevelt. It's amazing to me. On a number of levels right now, I'm ashamed that I am an American, politically speaking. I'm ashamed. And it comes out on this program when I just get into these rages, because I don't know what to do. The system no longer responds. The political system that we have in this country no longer responds, either because it has been jerry-rigged to make it impossible for normal people to get a response, or because all politicians, Democrat and Republican alike, are liars. We all know that Republicans are all liars, every single damn one of them. But I sometimes worry about people in my Democratic Party as to whether or not they, you know, when you have leading lights in the Democratic Party talking about impeachment, and then as soon as they get control of the party, say, well, no, that's off the table. That calls into question my support of what they're about. So I understand what you're saying. I don't know what the answer is here. I wish I did. I sometimes think the answer is just for everyone to start working their asses off in a very righteous way to get our country back. And then I stop and think, well, yeah, but maybe there's not a country to get back. Maybe we need to go ahead and split this country into two or three pieces and let the religious fanatics and the right-wing neo-Nazis have their chunk. And just tell them to, of course, they would probably declare war on the other two chunks once they got their chunk. I don't know what to do anymore. I don't think I ever knew what to do. I always believed, let me tell you something, Matthew, I always believed in that idea that my mother and grandmother used to tell me, I guess, you know, things will get better. You know, as long as you behave yourself and do right and do right spiritually, politically, don't be a liar, don't be a sneak, just you try to be a truth teller, things will be okay. Things move from chaos to order, which we all know is not true in the physical world. They move from order to chaos. But I don't know what to do anymore. And if you do, or you know somebody who does, for God's sake, let us know.
I guess the worst part is this didn't have to happen.
No,
none
it didn't.
Of this.
No, it didn't.
It could have been prevented so easily, and it wasn't. It was neglect from everybody involved, and now we are in this hell. And as you told me a couple nights ago, it's up to my generation to make it better. And I mean, if you can,
what I said was, let me just qualify it. I'm not
okay.
Backpedaling. I've said in the past, it's always been up to your generation. Your generation being the younger.
Right.
at any given time, let's say there are three generations operating in this society. You know, the 20-somethings, the 50-somethings, and the 40-something, and the 70-somethings. And it's always up to the youngest of those three to bring about change. So I hope you can still do it. I hope your generation can do it, Matthew. I sure do.
I would take responsibility for it in an instant.
I hear you. All right, Matthew.
Not grow up in this world.
It's always good to hear from you, pal. You're quite a young man. Thanks a lot for checking in. I do appreciate it. We'll be back after the break, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy.
A birthday song they sang with mighty big lungs. Across the bar they hang her rubber band plum. Double D plum had her boots done. Then she smiled at me out of a big tun. Me and my chums.
look at them guns.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree.
21 past the hour. Wouldn't be Christmas without the King, would it? All right. Do we really have to do this again? I guess we do. Let's take a phone call first. Sharon is calling from Tucson. Sharon, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mr. Malloy.
Hello, Ms. Sharon.
Oh, my goodness. I had you on Sirius Radio on Air America. Then you went to XM. I went got an XM radio. Then I couldn't find you anymore. I emailed you, tried to find out. I said, where are you?
Uh-huh.
And I turned on my Sirius Radio after working hard all day.
There he is.
I saw you. I am so happy. That's my Christmas present. Thank you.
Well, Sharon, I'm happy you're happy. Thank you. You know what? I'm going to play O Holy Nightmare just for you. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. Listen to your Sirius satellite radio because we're about to do it, all right?
Okay.
Thanks, Sharon. You take care. All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Sharon. This is for Sharon and anyone else out there. O Holy Nightmare. So sit back, hold on, and let her rip.
Oh, holy night, stars are brightly shining. It is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pine. Till he appeared, and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Oh, on your knees, oh, hear the angels' voices. Oh, night divine. Christ was born. Oh, night divine. Oh, night. Oh, night
divine night.
Oh, night divine.
There's nothing to say. Absolutely nothing to say.
The first thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me is finding a Christmas tree. The second thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The third thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
hangovers, rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The fourth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me,
sending Christmas cards,
hangovers,
rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree. The fifth thing at Christmas that's such a pain to me, 5 months of bills,
sending Christmas cards,
hangovers,
rigging up the lights
and finding a Christmas tree.
It's about 26 before the hour. The story of the birth of Jesus as recorded in the book of Luke. From the Gospel of Luke, Chapter 2, verse 14. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed. And all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph also went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, to be taxed with Mary, his espoused wife, being great with child. And so it was that while they were there, the days were accomplished that she should be delivered. And she brought forth her firstborn son, and wrapped him in swaddling clothes, and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. And there were in the same country shepherds abiding in the field, keeping watch over their flock by night. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day, in the city of David, a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. You shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly, there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it came to pass, as the angels were gone away from them into heaven, the shepherds said one to another,
Let us now go even unto Bethlehem and see this thing which has come to pass, which the Lord hath made known unto us. And they came with haste, and found Mary and Joseph and the babe lying in a manger. And when they had seen it, they made known abroad the saying which was told them concerning this child. And all they that heard it wondered at those things which were told them by the shepherds. But Mary kept all these things, and pondered them in her heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things that they had heard and seen, as it was told unto them. That's such a great story. That is such a wonderful story, isn't it? Back to your phone calls. Diane is calling from Boulder. Hey, Diane.
Hello. How's life on the outside?
Are you calling from a snowdrift?
Yes, I am.
Hey, you guys really got hammered today, didn't you?
I thought it wasn't going to be a big deal. I mean, the weathermen lie all the time.
Yes, they lie like a rug.
And then it just kept on coming down, and it took 4 hours to get home on the bus because cars are being abandoned on one of the main roads that never, ever closes. And I know I was blessed because I had a home to go to. I had heat. I had food. I had people who cared.
And you have a white Christmas.
Well, maybe a white Christmas, no matter what I do, but I just know that Christmas is supposed to be slowing down and taking measure and not going shopping, no matter what that bastard said. It is being with the people you care about and checking in with them and knowing what your blessings are. And for a lot of people in Colorado and the West, extending out, I think, to the panhandle and whatnot, we're learning that lesson kind of hard. We think that we have the world on a string once we have four-wheel drive, but we don't. And sometimes God makes that quite clear. And people can be talking about, well, it's like a disaster, we have to be prepared, and oh my goodness, what do we do? And we sort of say, weather can be really interesting karma, can it?
Yeah.
If we're not paying attention to slightly warmer deluges down south in New Orleans, and suddenly we get struck with this and we say, oh, that's what that's like. There's only been a record of like two or three roofs being caved in, and the snow's dry enough, so it will hopefully not lead to flooding. But if that happens, what are people going to do? I mean, they emphasize that, yes, people from the Red Cross were out there, and they were putting people in shelters and making sure you could get them out of cars, but multiply that times a million, and we know what they faced and what they still face. So it's just a moment to step back and be grateful that I can see my old movies and no one I know has been hurt, and that no matter what sort of weather comes around Christmas, I'm still blessed, no matter how angry I get at the waste and the corruption that goes forth.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
I mean, Jesus was born, and still Caesar wanted to tax him. Herod wanted to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
Governments were being evil all around him, from the moment he took breath to the day he died.
Sounds familiar.
And still, some goodness took place. If not for the disciples being the disciples, but at least people saying there's another way. You do not have to act like this. You have a choice.
That's right.
And the people who are not listening to that message are the ones that we're suffering under. But then again, we're in America where we're suffering this. Things can get bad, but we built a system that lasted long enough so good things can happen too. We just don't let it get to the last breath. We don't let it get to critical condition. But if we don't pay attention, and that means snapping out of me listening to Christmas songs for the rest of the year and actually paying attention to what Congress does, then we're going to lose it.
Yeah.
I want to listen to Christmas songs. I'm not denying it. I haven't listened to a certain liberal radio network in several days. I've been listening basically to you, and I'm saying, should I feel guilty? And I'm saying, it's okay, because I'm reading the papers. I'm still reading the blogs. I'm still connected in that way, but just having it in my ear all day, I want to say, okay, how many versions of White Christmas can I listen to?
Really?
And I know that that feeling has to be someplace in my heart, or else there's no reason to fight. There's no reason to lift up the sword or put pen to paper or stand in the rain to protest something. There's really no point. And I think the sad part about all the struggles that we've seen over the past how many years since Iran-Contra, since they kicked Jimmy Carter to the curb? All those struggles that we still had a heart for something, and it isn't like getting your family out of bed just for that one day where they volunteer at the homeless shelter. It is knowing what you can do a little bit every day to make things better.
Well, that's a good place to that's a good place to stop.
I understand. I'm just babbling.
Little things you can do to make things better. That's perfect. That's perfect. Thanks, Diane.
You're welcome.
Have a happy Christmas. All right.
For you and the family as well.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, ma'am. Thanks to the crew for tonight's program, Ian Huff, who engineered the program in Phoenix and answered your calls, Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, at MikeMolloy.com, and the militant moderators there. Thanks, guys, for another wonderful year. Your checks are in the mail. Ben Birch, White Rose Society, archives the program, and tomorrow night, Jeff Farias will be filling in Monday night, Christmas. Some sort of madness, best of Mike Molloy. We haven't been with his network long enough to have a best of. What, Kathy? Oh, you got to replay. Oh, okay. Got to replay tonight's show on Christmas. All right. Well, that's cool. That's cool. Dean in Connecticut writes, Mike, on Monday, Christmas Day, I'm filling in on the college radio station at which I've been a volunteer DJ since 1992. I'll be on the air from 1 to 5 in the afternoon Eastern Time. And we'll do a show called Christmas Music with a Spine. It's a perfect antidote for people who ate the same old bland, boring, white bread, overplayed Christmas crapola with which the commercial stations have attempted to kill our brain cells, lo, these many years. To catch the live webcast, go to whus.org. You want that again? whus.org. That's 1 to 5 on Christmas Day. This obviously is a radio station, a college station in Connecticut. We got to check this out, all right? See what this is all about. Christmas Music with a Spine, whus.org. That's on Christmas Day, noon to 1 to 5, 1 to 5 Eastern Time. And also, a special thanks tonight. Spitfire sent me an email a couple of nights ago, or a week ago, to John and Peggy Armstrong, who sent us O Holy Nightmare, lo, those many years ago. And we have played it every year since. So there you go, Spitfire. Credit where credit is due. I hope you all had fun tonight. I'm sorry you couldn't see the half-naked elves dancing around the studio here, but trust me, they were here. Let's try to squeeze in another phone call here. Another Diane. Diane from Fredericksburg, Virginia. Hey, Diane.
Hey, I'm glad to talk to you. Believe it or not, I tried calling this time last year.
Oh, yeah?
I did. I had an interesting experience last year. My husband and I go to D.C. quite often to visit the Franklin Roosevelt Memorial, and I highly recommend it. And this particular day, of course, we've gone to many, many protests in D.C., and Roosevelt evokes just very strong feelings, and we had a very sad day thinking about the jerk in the White House.
Oh, my God.
And as we were heading back late towards the White House, a car just appeared out of nowhere. I mean, it was a busy night, and someone pulled over and asked us, would we like tickets to the White House Christmas tree lighting? Well,
you're kidding.
No. And my inkling was no, or I would take them and throw them in the trash. My husband said, take the tickets. So we did, and then we went over to the party and stood in line. And as we went in, we noted that they took us to one side. As it turned out, we had the special white tickets.
Uh-oh. And what did that get you?
It got us right down front.
Yeah!
I mean, like, within four rows of the president.
Yeah.
Yes, it was stunning. Well, I should preface the story by saying that on the way back, maybe I shouldn't say this, but we had done a little bit of.
No, that's all right. Okay, I understand.
And we were, it was very, very surreal. Not only did we get the white tickets, but so we got hurried right up to the front, and everybody, and I mean, we had people in evening gowns and furs, and you know, very nicely dressed suits and so forth. And we were just kind of sitting there stunned.
Stunned or stoned or both?
Both.
Yeah, okay.
Both. I mean, it was absolutely surreal.
Did you ever wonder why you were given the tickets?
I just think someone wasn't able to go, because it was really actually quite hard to get the tickets. You have to get them by 8:30 in the morning.
Right.
And ironically, my husband had suggested, and I getting these tickets, I said, no way am I going to wait in line for these tickets, you know, and sit with these sycophants. No, I don't think so. But we did go, and it was bizarre beyond belief. I mean, not only did we have the white tickets in the white section, but the white family, Ricky White and the Whites, saying, I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. it was beyond bizarre. And
oh, my God.
I've waited a year to tell you this. I'm so excited to tell you, because I just thought I would die. It was,
how did the night wind up? I mean, after you left, did you guys, your husband, right? You and your husband.
Uh-huh.
Did you leave, and on the way home, did you say, what just happened?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, we were pinching ourselves. I mean, it was too bizarre. Just plucked off the street and taken to this thing, and to be given essentially front row tickets.
Tickets in the white section.
In the white section, yes, I kept those.
Hear the white family sing White Christmas.
Yeah, unreal, absolutely. And I mean, they had everything. It was, except they had Maya Angelou, but I couldn't pronounce her name right.
Yeah.
And she was bizarre being there. I mean, talk about, you know, being out of sync.
Out of sync, yeah.
It was.
Diane, that's the best Christmas story I've heard in a long time.
Everybody keep a happy face, because this time last year I was miserable thinking about this, and this time I'm feeling at least a little hope.
And you never know when somebody will pull up and offer you tickets. Thanks, Diane.
Okay.
You take
care. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to everybody.
Same to you, Diane. Take care. I'll see you Tuesday evening, True Seekers. Jeff Farias tomorrow. Rerun of this program on Christmas Day. Have a Merry Christmas. All right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
God is not dead, nor doth he sleep.